This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Recently, we asked some people about sharing their New York Times accounts.
My name is Dana. I am a subscriber to the New York Times, but my husband isn't. And it would be really nice to be able to share a recipe or an article or compete with him in Wordle or Connections. Thank you.
Dana, we heard you. Introducing the New York Times Family Subscription. One subscription, up to four separate logins for anyone in your life. Find out more at nytimes.com/family.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest minutes of the show. We had a busy hour. We just had a whole hour with President of the United States on Fox and Friends, so I'm going to bring you some of that. We're going to have Senate Majority Leader John Thune in studio in a matter of moments. We'll bring you that. Also, Congresswoman Ashley Hinson will be here of Iowa. She'll be in studio, too. And we got a lot going on. We found the assassin of Charlie Kirk. The President of the United States confirmed that. On our couch 1 hour ago, they got the guy. They're going to be a press conference at 9:30. He was found, we believe, 3.5 hours away of where the shooting took place. It looks like his family, along with I guess you would not say pastor, a reverend that also has a law enforcement background, was able to announce it. I don't know if we have the exact cut. Do we have the cut where the president actually says? Yeah, Tim, let's play that.
With a high degree of certainty, we have him in custody. Right? In custody, everyone did a great job. We worked with the local police, the governor. Everybody did a great job. You know, getting somebody that you start off with absolutely nothing. And we started off with a clip that made him look like an ant that was almost useless. We just saw there was somebody up there. And so much work has been done over the last 2.5 days.
So the President of the United States 1 hour ago confirming, you don't need another source, that they got the guy. The FBI picked up the guy last night. I mean, we saw the video, the TMZ video. We saw what was released to us. We understand the investigators, the local police, even had better stuff. So we knew when Kash Patel came to town, Dan Bongino was here, they were getting close, and they got him. Senator John Thune, great to see you, sir.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Brian.
So you know the president confirmed it. You probably knew
yes.
It. So what could you tell us about this guy and the relief you must feel that we got him?
Well, I think everybody's relieved, Brian, and I think like most people, we were hearing this morning directly from the president, and obviously very good news in the sense that there's a lot of anxiety, I think, out there right now about this, and having him still at large. So the fact that he's been apprehended and is being held now in custody, I think will come as a great relief to all Americans, and obviously a set of circumstances that we don't want to see in the future. And I'm hoping that there'll be some lessons learned from this, but time will tell.
It does seem to be somebody who disagreed with him politically, to be kind.
Yeah.
So instead of someone saying, "Oh, I'm a crazy guy that wants to kill people and be famous," maybe the John Lennon assassin, this person hated what he stood for. I think that makes it more concerning.
Right. Well, it does, because it gets at the heart of what this country is all about, and that is open access and an opportunity to have public debates, to air our differences in a way that is hopefully in most circumstances obviously respectful. But this is an example of where a disagreement spilled over into just violence and lethal violence. And so there's no justification, no defense, no excuse. This is the kind of thing that just has to be dealt with. He needs to be prosecuted to the full letter of the law.
So what are you telling lawmakers who are concerned about even having events this weekend? You know, AOC said, I'm canceling my event in North Carolina. What do you say to people? I mean, you might feel the same way.
Well, I mean, I have had a number of our colleagues in the Senate who have expressed concerns and suggested that they're and so we're trying to work with individual senators to come up with plans that provide a level of security for them when they're back home in their states. And we had a number of them this week that expressed concerns about their safety, the safety of their families, and particularly at public events. So, and it's unfortunate, Brian, because this is the thing to me about America and our political system is that the access that people have to public officials. And so if you have to start in some way, restraining members from being out there or, sort of fear of public safety, that's a really unfortunate circumstance.
What impact did he make, Joey Kirk, on your job, your reelection, you being the majority right now, the president being back in the White House?
Well, I think he had a powerful impact, as we all know, politically, in the sense that he got younger people motivated to vote. And there
Did you
was
think a, that was possible as a Republican?
No, I mean, we've always, as you know, it's been, we've been in the wilderness for a long time with the younger generations, but he had a way of connecting with people that made them feel part of something that's bigger than themselves. And I think most people want to be part of something that gives them a sense, a cause that's bigger than themselves. And I think that was the real gift that he had, was not only his the strength of his convictions, which were clear, but also his passion for sharing those. And there was a spirituality about him, I think, too, that people find attractive today. That was infectious. And I think a lot of young people in particular are looking for something to believe in, something in which they can find hope. And I think he represented that to a lot of people. And they were able to identify with him and the things that he, the convictions that he held.
So let's talk about what you have to do front and center. Next week will be the funeral. We're going to find out details about the assassin within 25 minutes. But you have to try to keep the government open. And you also have to try to get over 100 nominees through who are without controversy, just being held up for political purposes. What are you doing on both?
Yeah, I mean, Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats have engaged in petty partisanship on a level that has been unseen in American history. We've gone back in the annals of history, can't find a president who has had the opposition party completely shut down his ability to get his people in place. He won was a duly elected president. He won an election in this country. The people of this country expect him to have his team to be able to implement his agenda. The Democrats
and
the Senate have
been stretched up. And you got the first round through quick.
We did. We worked very, very quickly, but we just stayed in and just ground it out. Well, you get past that upper level and you start getting to the sub-cabinet level people who historically have been just kind of waved through by unanimous consent or voice vote, in many cases, because they're not controversial. And obviously, I think most Americans, and I certainly hold this view, that the president deserves to have his team in place. The Democrats have blocked that at every turn. So we took a unique step yesterday to bust that loose. And so in the next week or two, we will be processing big blocks of the president's nominees.
So for now on, the way you do nominees have changed.
It has. It's changed.
Just and simply your votes?
Well, we're going to be able to we will be able to now move them in blocks, which is something, honestly, believe it or not, the Democrats had suggested back when Biden was president. And so we gave them a chance yesterday to vote on that. They blocked the vote. And so we went forward with a rules change. We will fully complete early next week, and then we'll vote on the first 50 or so nominees that are held up.
So That'll be great. Mike Waltz, one of them?
Mike Waltz is in one of those blocks, either the first one or the second one, I think.
Because you're going to have the 80th year of the UN. Would not be great not to have a UN ambassador.
Yeah, and no, totally.
Especially
and
him.
And we understand that, yeah. And it's important till we get him in that position. Yeah,
all right.
I agree.
So if you don't mind, just put a hold the headset up to your ear.
Yes.
Senator Lindsey Graham is calling on you and Chuck Schumer to do this. Cut 20.
So this legislation, if passed, would designate Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism under U.S. law until they return the children. If you want to vote no, we will make you famous. You need to vote. Thune and Schumer need to bring this bill up soon so we can tell Europe and the rest of the world, follow our lead.
So unless you return the 20,000 kids you stole, you're going to be on the state terror list. Will you bring that up?
Well, we will. And Lindsey's got another bill, that the Russia sanctions bill, which has broad bipartisan support in the Senate. And also, I think, hopefully at some point, we'll get a vote. Both of those are steps that I think identify Russia for what they are. And for Putin for what he is, and clearly make a statement to the rest of the world that hopefully the rest of the world will follow. At least certainly the West and freedom loving countries in the world, I think, can rally around the cause of these children and Russia's role. And then also, I think, even more broadly than that, the sanctions issue, which would impose economic penalties on countries that do business with them.
You want to make sure the president would sign this.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to put him in a bad place if he's not ready.
And so we have been working with the White House on that legislation. And we want to make sure that when we move it, it's something that they are comfortable with and that they think enhances their ability to get a deal with Russia. And gives them the tools that they need. And so when the administration's ready to move, we will move.
I just want you to hear what the foreign minister and prime minister of Poland said about nine or a bunch of drones going for his country from Belarus, came from Belarus and from Russia. This is what he told Brett last night, Cut 23.
We were supposed to have sanctions, and instead we got Alaska. And since then, as you say, attacks have intensified. So I hope President Trump does what he has said he might do. To help Ukraine win, you have to give them long-range missiles to continue a successful campaign against Russian refineries.
How do you feel about that? I personally think it would be a great move to let Russia pay the price since they're actually aiming for residential areas. They're not taking on soldiers.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think that anything we can do that enhances Ukraine's ability to meet force with force on the battlefield and bring Russia to the table, we ought to be doing. And this incursion into Polish airspace is a whole new level, which I think strikes at the very heart of sort of what this conversation is about, and that is the fact that Putin is going to continue to test us. And I think we've got to meet force with force. And one of the ways to do that, obviously, is to give the munitions and the arms and the weaponry that the Ukrainians need.
Finland's got their cage rattled. They're trying to, and Finland's a formidable force, so they know what they're against. No one has to explain their neighborhood. Poland's literally building a wall.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At this hour.
Yeah.
So, and then we know how the Ukrainians can fight. The good news is, Senator, in my humble opinion, Europe no longer has to be convinced by the Americans that they got to defend themselves. The good news is they want to buy the weapons from us. The bad news is we have not expanded our industrial base.
Right.
Have you seen an effective proposal to expand our industrial base, be able to satisfy customers like Taiwan and Vietnam and Japan and, of course, Europe? We want it. They'll pay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and there are a lot of great companies out there, Brian, that have innovative solutions that deal with kind of the evolutions that are occurring in modern warfare. And so the use of drones is becoming increasingly and so we've got a lot of really good innovation in America, companies that are on the cutting edge of this that we need to start doing business with, and our military industrial base needs to change and modernize and evolve.
Have you had the conversation with Roger Wicker and others?
Yeah,
they
have.
Got plans.
Yep, they totally. And but the one big beautiful bill had I would say generational investment in national security, having to do with ships, having to do with air assets, having to do with just replacing and building up munitions and that sort of thing. So that the One Big Beautiful Bill, I think, was an important step forward, but obviously it's not enough. We've got to continue to be ready to meet the threats of modern warfare that are being employed by a lot of our adversaries. But the one thing you mentioned was really important, and I was in Finland a couple of weeks ago and met with the Finnish leaders there. These people get it now, and I think they are more than ever want to work as partners with the U.S. And I think they're ready to buy our equipment. We just got to be able to start producing it at scale.
And I guess when you see a program, I know we have money. You just want to see a program that they plan on learning how to build ships again, even if we have to contract them out, the icebreakers, even if we have to go buy them from other countries, right?
Finland, Norway are very interested in icebreakers. And we are going to have to buy some of them from other countries because we don't have that. We don't have the capacity to do it in the U.S.
You made it clear you don't love the tariff idea, and because you have a very ag-driven state, and you feel as though they're being affected negatively, soybeans especially. Correct.
Yeah.
So your reaction to where we're at now, because you know the president cares about the farmers first, almost. So are we in that deal-making mode now that people have to suck it up? Or is it this China? Is this a U.S.-China problem because they buy most of your soybeans?
Yeah, they do, largely U.S.-China. Although, if we can find other markets, we just need markets. We've got a really big crop coming in here this fall, and no place to go with it. China's not buying, and 60% of our soybeans in South Dakota go to the export market. So it's a function of increasing demand, opening markets. I've impressed upon the White House the importance when they cut these deals of making sure that agriculture is front and center, because our farmers are the president's base. I mean, they believe in him. They're cutting him a lot of slack to make this work. But at the end of the day, and I've suggested too, because you heard him talk about on your show just now, the amount of revenue that's coming in off the tariffs. If that's true, they're probably going to need to set some of that aside to support farmers and ranchers.
He's done it before, but they don't want money. They want to sell.
They want to sell, and I'm with them. We need open markets more than anything else, but they're also going to need a bridge to the time when those deals start to come together, especially with China.
We only have 90 seconds left, and you have to go do a TV hit. But do you think the China summit that's coming up, I mean, we're in the middle of high-level, very adult-like talks with China. Is this in those talks? I mean, of them buying it, they need it.
Yeah.
So are they getting it from Brazil?
Yeah, they can. I mean, that's the challenge. They find other places to buy. But the U.S. is still, if you look at – and they're willing to pay more. They're paying more right now to buy Brazilian soybeans than they are the U.S. only because of the, this trade sort of standoff we're at with them. But I hope the president can break through it. He has shown a remarkable ability not only to get people to the table, but to create reciprocity with countries that have been taking advantage of us. China is certainly an example of that, but they need to have ag front and center.
You liking the job?
It's a as you know, Brian, there are good days and bad days, but you feel like if you're getting things done, and we are, then that's where you get your satisfaction from.
Yeah, I think that nothing but great things everybody hears about Senator John Thune. Some people of both sides like to work with. Senator, best of luck keeping the government open on all those balls in the air.
Yeah.
Senator John Thune, thanks so much.
Brian, good to be with you as always. Thanks.
Right.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Fall is planting season. Did you know that many plants and trees actually do better when planted this time of year? I didn't know it either, but you have to know where to start. That's why I love FastGrowingTrees.com. It doesn't matter if you live in a sunny south or if the air is getting chilly where you are. Their plant experts can help you find the perfect fit for your space. They have all the plants your yard needs, like fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and so much more. Fast Growing Trees make it so easy to get the dream yard that you need. Order online and get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without leaving your home. They're alive, they thrive, they're guaranteed, and ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy. All plants and trees are locally grown in the U.S., ensuring they will thrive in your yard. You can feel confident that these plants and trees will thrive in your yard because they are grown to last by American farmers on American soil. So how difficult and annoying is it to shop around for plants in person? Think about how messy your car gets when you do get the right plant. Then by the time you get home, it's always on its side. And then when you get it, you think to yourself, what did the guy tell me I should be planting this? And how much shade does it need? And when do I water it? You don't have to worry about that anymore. So this fall, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase when they're using promo code KILLMEAD at checkout. That's 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the promo code KILLMEAD at checkout. Now's the perfect time to plant. Use KILLMEAD to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out this link below or in show notes and support the show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. I went a little long with the majority leader, but man, does he have a lot on his plate. We always appreciate when he comes in, gives us the latest information, fresh off sitting down with the President of the United States about an hour ago, and he announced that they got the guy. They got the guy 3.5 hours from his house over in Utah. I don't have many details. There's a press conference about to be filled in, I guess. It's supposed to start within minutes. But essentially, it looks like somebody, I'm watching this stuff online and you're watching this stuff online. I would not be surprised if this guy was one of the people that sparred with Charlie Kirk at one of his events. And remember, on the casings was some trans sayings. And it was on that trans question when he took a shot. And people who know how to use a gun say it's not a hard shot, but under those circumstances, perhaps it is. But we have pictures of him everywhere. We have this guy touching the banister. We have him going up with a clean black shirt and coming down that staircase full of the dust from the roof. We got his footprints, a Converse shoes. We see him walking through the neighborhood. Only thing, you can't see his face. He's got a hat and glasses. But my goodness, if you know this guy, you didn't need the hat and glasses off. And thankfully, a pastor and some friends turned him in. I hope he gets the death penalty. Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
More than anything, we are going to catch this person. Last thing I will just say is we've been working with our attorneys, getting everything that we need, affidavits ready, so that we can pursue the death penalty in this case. And that will happen here in the state of Utah.
All right. I'll give a lot of information. So nice to Senator John Thune to be waiting in studio for, or me coming up here and having him waiting in studio right after talking to President Trump. That was Governor Spencer Cox, who's been he is a fantastic communicator. I didn't know much about him, but since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and on top of that, we do have the killer in custody, the alleged killer in custody. We know his father turned him in, and a member of the clergy who also happens to work in law enforcement recognized him. So he's turned in, he is alive, and it looks as though, if you look at the evidence as of today, if the trial was tomorrow, it's overwhelming. His name is Tyler Robinson. So, Tyler Robinson. We don't know anything about him. We do know that there was some trans material on one of the casings. And when you take one shot, and that's the casing that you use, use an older gun, and he pulls it off. We're finding out more about him. Maybe we could take a look and see what we know about him, Allison. That just put that name through as we wait for the press conference to come through. So I hope this press conference is definitive, and it does seem to be it. It's very similar to the Boston bomber, very similar to the hunt for Luigi, who we ended up finding in Pennsylvania after he went uptown. We tracked him on all these video cameras, on these Ring doorbells, all the way up to uptown New York City. Ends up in Pennsylvania, get him at a McDonald's. It looks like they did such a good job getting the pictures out. And then last night, I don't know if they expected to announce an apprehension, but they didn't. And then we got word that a government plane was being flown in to Utah. And a lot of our experts said they wouldn't do that if they weren't flying a high-value target out of Utah. So the hunt could be over. Then we go find out why somebody would do this. Is this, and it looks to be, just pure politics? Is this just, hey, don't like this guy politically. He gets me angry. So I think I'll kill him. You know, this was Bernard Zipor. He's a ATF special agent, does investigations. He thought this whole capture was imminent. Listen to this, cut eight.
That I think he'll be captured soon. And there's only three outcomes here. One, he commits suicide. Two, he's killed in an engagement with law enforcement, or he's captured alive. All of which, those possibilities could happen very quickly. There's only one really modern fugitive that has escaped justice, and that was Eric Rudolph, the Olympic Park bomber. But he had the entire mountains of the Southeast that he was incredibly familiar with. He had support. It took years for him to finally just sort of walk out of the woods and reveal himself. But this is not the case. This is a young person, and he's not going to have the support network or the knowledge or maybe even the veracity to avoid capture for very long.
It looks like he has not avoided capture. He's been turned in. So I want you to hear President Trump talk about how he found out that Charlie was dead.
Listen. And we lost an unbelievable warrior. And I think they're going to, I have a feeling that Erica, you know, I spoke to her long yesterday. She's devastated. And I said, in between the devastation, she made statements. I said, you should try and do that because Turning Point is a real power. And I think she may, and, you know, her group, I think they're going to
rally around
keep
her
it together. And you know, things like that have happened before. You make it bigger, better, stronger. I said, only do it if you're going to make it bigger and better. Can you do it? But I didn't want to talk about that too much because she was just, she can't, you know, it's going to take her a while to get better from this. It's a tough.
Two little ones.
Yeah, and beautiful, beautiful kids. But I'll never forget Barron coming back saying, Dad, that guy's great. You know, normally he's not full of praise.
What do you tell him now?
He was very hurt when he saw this. But, I mean, everybody was. Oh, when I heard it, I was in the midst of, you know, building a great, for 150 years they've wanted a ballroom. Mm-hmm. At the White House, right? They don't have a ballroom. They have to use tents on the lawn for right. President Xi when he comes over. If it rains, it's a wipeout. And so I was with the architects that were designed. It's going to be incredible. And they came in. They said, Charlie Kirk is dead. I didn't know what they meant. I said, what do you mean dead? Charlie Kirk was shot. And they thought he was dead because it was so horrific. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And I said, dead? You got, and it was like, I just told these people, get out, just go. You got it. This is the worst thing. This was so bad for our country. But sometimes, out of really bad things, things can happen that can be good.
So that was President Trump right at the end of our interview, and we went into the next show, which we never do, but you can't cut off the president, nor do I want to in that situation. So when we come back, Congresswoman Ashley Hinson wants to replace Senator Joni Ernst in Iowa. She's going to be with us in a matter of moments. And we are waiting for the FBI press conference to confirm the capture of the alleged assassin who killed Charlie Kirk.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back, and it's our privilege to have with us in studio Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, a Republican out of Iowa. On this day, we are still waiting for the FBI to do their press conference and formally announce the arrest of Tyler Robinson for the killing of Charlie Kirk. He was turned in by his dad, who is a 27-year veteran as a sheriff in the area. So he handled the arrest. I guess he made it smooth. But everybody who knew the guy, we had enough photos and video that there's no way everyone was going to keep their mouth shut, thankfully. So Congresswoman Ashley Hinson has made a big decision. She's going to look to run for Joni Ernst's Senate seat because she will be retiring. Congresswoman, welcome on this big day.
Thank you. No, it is a big news day. And obviously, I think it's a sad week for our country. We, you know, had to remember 9/11 yesterday. We saw a very active and important conservative voice be silenced on Wednesday. And now we're watching a father have to make a gut-wrenching decision and turn his son in and do the right thing. But it's a tough week for our country and a tough week for people in these positions.
Absolutely. And meanwhile, in Congress, you have to decide if you're going to keep the government open. Not you, but there's big news. And then you're trying to get nominees passed. A nuclear option is going to be used now to get them passed. So that's going to change things.
Yeah.
What is it like in Congress now?
Yeah, I think that, you know, my governing philosophy never changed depending on who was in the majority and who was in the minority, because I still, at the end of the day, need to get things done for Iowans, and that's my goal. But it has reached a point where the Democrats don't seem to want to negotiate in good faith, and their only message is they hate the president. And I think the American people clearly want us to get things done. That's right. Why they sent us back, and that's why they sent the president back. So I think Chuck Schumer, they have no plan and no real message other than that they hate the president.
So I just want to give you this reaction, and I know you're not going to be that surprised by it, but if you want to hold that headset to your ear, I just want to play some of the reaction. Charlie Kirk, he's getting a lot of respect from, I saw CNN and ABC and NBC, for the most part, very understand how the magnitude of this, even if they right. don't agree with him. But listen to Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, cut nine.
There are a lot of people who are out there talking about him just wanting to have a civil debate. These people are full and it's important for us to call them out while we feel anger and sadness. There is nothing more up, you know, like than to completely pretend that, you know, his words and actions have not been recorded and in existence for the last decade or so.
Not only were they recorded, they were trumpeted, but they've been playing nonstop. Mm-hmm. So no one's hiding this. So do you understand that type of hate?
I don't. And frankly, I don't understand where they're coming from, because Charlie was out there. Charlie
debating.
Was out, truly debating and saying, come and change my mind and have a good debate. And that's what I think is at the heart of why his silencing and this hateful act is going to be remembered as. Actually, he's created a whole bunch more Charlie Kirks by doing this. Right. My son is 14 years old. And was so inspired by Charlie and his courage to go out and do those debates. We had a conversation with him Wednesday night. You know, my husband asked him, how many of these videos have you watched of Charlie's? He said, all of them. And so when I think about
what, you almost feel like he lost a friend.
Yeah. And I mean, my last text to Charlie last week was to tell him that my son wanted to open a Turning Point chapter at his high school in Marion, Iowa.
Wow.
And so I think that there are families just like mine with kids. You know, we're thinking about what the future means for them. These kids are thinking about what the future means for them. And that's what Charlie emboldened and embodied. And so to see this happen, this hate, I think there's a very special place in hell for someone who did this to Charlie and does this to anyone. But I think the end result of this is going to be 10,000, a million more Charlie Kirks out there.
Like, I still don't know of anything about the assassin, and I watched two specials on him, why he tried to kill the president. I really don't. He was all over the place. He hated everybody. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't tell, but why they rushed to clean everything out, why we never talked to the parents or found out what brought him there, it's a huge mystery. Then this guy, Ryan Ruth, is obviously deranged. He's representing himself in court, ironically, right now, saying crazy-ass things mm-hmm. over in the court. So he's obviously demented. Okay. Now, this guy goes to college. We just watched a video together of him getting a $32,000 scholarship, so he's got brains.
Seems like he's on the right path.
Right. Dad, law enforcement, you know, seems like a normal guy. And he thought, I have to kill Charlie Kirk. So does that make you worry about your next event? that you're in? And are you lawmakers talking to each other about that?
Yeah, and I do think we need to have conversations about security, and I support that. And I've tried to make sure that I can still be safe in doing my job. I've been out there doing those public town halls. I had to increase security at mine. I think that certainly we need to get rid of the vitriol, but it's clear that if people feel so emboldened to go shoot the president or shoot Charlie Kirk and do so because they don't agree with something, we have to have a bigger conversation around political discourse in this country.
So let's talk about what matters a lot to Iowa farming. Yeah. How are the tariffs affecting farming? Because I just talked to Senator Thune, and it's really hurting South Dakota right now. We're waiting for China and this China deal to come in.
Yeah, and China is a huge part of trade and trade negotiations. I think what's important to Iowa farmers is they understand President Trump is trying to get a good deal for them. We've sat on the sidelines for 4 years under Biden, where he didn't even put a trade ambassador into place for a year and a half. We saw no new trade deals or negotiations, no new access to markets.
And he just left stuff in place, which is interesting, isn't it?
Right. And so he at least respected what President Trump had tried to do in his first term. Now it comes down to true accountability and making sure we're getting good deals. And so I am focused in Congress on the accountability side. I have legislation to make sure we're actually holding these bad actors accountable if they're using transnational shipment and evasive tactics to not pay the duties and tariffs that they owe the United States to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars every year. It's already driving...
All countries or what countries?
Well, all countries, but specifically China, right? They're, I think, the worst offender. So as the president's concurrently having these negotiations, trying to get us not just deals with China, but deals around the world, we have great opportunity to make sure our farmers, our manufacturers have access to these markets. And so in the big, beautiful bill, the Working Families Tax Cut bill, we did include some significant funding to help support that effort diplomatically, as well as with what the president's trying to do. I would like to see these deals happen sooner rather than later. And that's something I've been very clear with our folks back home. We are actively communicating with the White House. Farmers need a deal, but President Trump's not going to abandon them.
So as somebody who is on a committee to talk about competing with and against China, what were your thoughts about seeing the Chinese leader, the Russian leader, the North Korean leader, and the Indian president there together in Beijing?
Very troublesome. I think, you know, when I look at the alliances that President Xi is trying to form, he's trying to directly compete with us and undermine us at every step of the way. So I think that's just a very public way that he's putting a bow on that. But this has been happening for decades. So this is why the work we're doing, again, to kind of stand firm and back up what the president's trying to do in negotiating a deal. We have to be firm. They've gotten away with all of these like malign practices for decades, and they've not had anybody hold them accountable.
And I guess the president is working, the Secretary of State is trying to, I guess, set the table along with the Secretary of Defense for a possible President Xi-Trump meeting. Would that be important?
Absolutely. I think, number one, it sends a signal that the line of communication is open. And that's a signal that I think our ag producers and our manufacturers need to see. They need the certainty in the market, the tax changes we made, I think, provided step one. The trade deal is step two. So getting that movement will give them, I think, some needed, I don't know if you call it, you know, assurance, but it certainly moves things in the right direction to let them know they're not, you know, just waiting around for the status quo.
Right. Because we know that they wouldn't even see the Secretary of State China of, I guess, Anthony Blinken for about 2 years.
Right.
And they berated him, I think, in a meeting they had in Alaska when they first took over, which was insulting to the country. You know, we watched Poland's prime foreign minister, who I think is also prime minister, talk to Brett last night about the drones that were directed into their country, not Ukraine, from Belarus and from Russia. Here's what the prime minister, the Polish foreign minister, said. Cut 22.
When we put up the map, you don't think this was a mistake?
It's hard to believe that, because some of them came over from Belarus and some came over from Ukraine. We've had similar breaches in the past. A cruise missile, a Russian one, landed 10 kilometers from my house in western Poland, but they came from Ukraine. This time they came from both Ukraine and Belarus.
And he asked the president to do this, cut 23.
We were supposed to have sanctions, and instead we got Alaska. And since then, as you say, attacks have intensified. So I hope President Trump does what he has said he might do. To help Ukraine win, you have to give them long-range missiles to continue a successful campaign against Russian refineries.
I hope he does. And the president indicated that sanctions, banking, But I would love for him to say, use the ATACMS how you want, and the long-range missiles from the UK and Germany.
Well, and I look at this from the standpoint, I had a chance to go visit Poland, Ukraine, and Moldova in April of last year. And we were with our troops on the border with Poland and Ukraine and talking about the logistics of getting those weapons in. But they constantly were having these incursions of drones coming in to spy on what their operations were. And so this has been going on for some time. And clearly, Russia has no real interest in ending this war. They want the territory. And while I'm encouraged that President Trump got him to the table, it's very clear we have to take additional action here. So I support additional sanctions on Russia. I think that's the first step to get them to take us seriously or in this conversation going forward. But they are escalating and not going the other direction, which we want to see that happen.
What was Moldova like?
Yeah. They're very afraid about what happens here because they have quite the Russian influence in the border with Ukraine. There's an area called Transnistria that was basically it was given to them by Russia, controlled by Russia, controls a lot of the power in the area. So you talk about what the liabilities are for them. It's a small country, only a few million people, about the size of the state of Iowa. And so they are very, very concerned about what happens if Russia is able to go into Ukraine.
You think you can win?
I know I can win. I know I can win.
Is there a primary?
Small primary, but I think most importantly, I have the president's endorsement. So the president's got my back. Leader Thune has my back. The NRSC and Tim Scott has my back. And I'm going to make sure I get out there and earn every vote in Iowa.
It's not easy, though. Like, Iowa's not a layup in an off-year election. It's going to be hard, right?
Well, I always take every race like I'm 10 points behind. I've run scrappy campaigns before. I flipped a seat in 2020 in Iowa during COVID, which is tough to run a campaign when you're a challenger then. I've learned a lot since then, and I've really enjoyed getting things done for Iowans, and I think that there's a lot more to do to back up the president.
Great to see you. Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, who wants to be the next senator from Iowa. Now she's doing a very important thing as congresswoman from Iowa. Have a great day.
Thanks. AshleyHinson.com for those who want to come support and help our race. Thank you.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're lucky enough to talk to President Trump on Fox and Friends for an hour. We'll bring you some of that. Where he led with the good news is they got the guy, Tyler Robinson, who killed Charlie Kirk. That's who he's accused of, but they got him on video. They got him on some still pictures. And they have evidently he confessed to his dad, a family member. His dad evidently brought him to police. And they're having the press conference now. The Utah governor's leading it. Kash Patel is there, all the other officials. Here's what we just heard from Governor Cox.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI.
So they are going in great detail in this press conference, talking about how they got him, family turned him in. The pictures were so apparent. I imagine somebody in his life would say, I know exactly who that is. Anyone that knew him, you'd be able to make that out by the hat, shirt, gait, shoes, location. He had a Challenger. Dodge Challenger was the car. We found the weapon. With us right now is Josh Krasher, Fox News radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, they got the guy. I guess the president told us that on the couch at 8 a.m. Eastern time, but now we know his name. Your thoughts?
Yeah, good news to start the morning. Was quite the must-watch interview, Brian, this morning on Fox and Friends when the president broke the news. But to hear law enforcement officials and the Utah governor confirm the fact that he is in custody and that he apparently is a 22-year-old that whose parent, you know, whose family friends saw the images posted yesterday by law enforcement and said that's my son. There's a lot more to come. I mean, the motive, what motivated someone who's a 22-year-old college student to commit this heinous murder is, I think, the next big question. And we may hear more from the law enforcement at the press conference. But it is good news right now to hear that he is in custody and and now justice will be served.
Here's more from the interview that's unfolding while we're speaking.
Investigators interviewed a family member of Robinson who stated that Robinson had become more political in recent years. The family member referenced a recent incident in which Robinson came to dinner prior to September 10th, and in the conversation with another family member, Robinson mentioned Charlie Kirk was coming to UVU. They talked about why they didn't like him and the viewpoints that he had. The family member also stated Kirk was full of hate and spreading hate. The family member also confirmed Robinson had a gray Dodge Challenger.
And that was the car that they identified as his car. But you knew, Josh, when we saw the video from last night, coming off the roof, walking through the process, you just knew it's a matter of time. And the only way we wouldn't catch him if he killed himself.
Well, look, and that sounds like we have the motive that this was, as we suspected, but hadn't really had any direct evidence that this was a political motivation for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So that is one important bit of evidence right now, live from Utah. Look, I also think one question is going to be, when we see so much about how young people get radicalized and turned to this extreme ideologies on social media, a lot of discussion has been paid in the last couple of days about just the sheer number of young Gen Zers who believe political violence is justifiable. Basically, no one, you know, in the baby boomer Gen X generation, endorses that kind of idea. But you see the disturbing number, like 25-30% of Gen Zers that actually rationalize political violence. And I think what makes this assassination so gut punching. And I wonder. I mean, we'll learn more about the person who they caught, but that is a disturbing. I mean, the fact that this is connected to his political views is, we all suspected it, but it's a real gut punch.
So right now, Kash Patel has taken over the microphone. Governor did a great job throughout this entire process communicating exactly his thoughts and the procedures. Here's more.
Investigators interviewed that roommate who stated that his roommate, referring to Robinson, made a joke on Discord. Investigators asked if he would show them the messages on Discord. He opened it and showed several messages to investigators and allowed investigators to take photos of the screen as each message was shown by Robinson's roommate. These photos consisted of various messages, including content of messages between the phone contact named Tyler with an emoji icon and Robinson's roommate's device. The content of these messages included messages affiliated with the contact Tyler, stating a need to retrieve a rifle from a drop point, leaving the rifle in a bush, messages related to visually watching the area where a rifle was left, and a message referring to having left the rifle wrapped in a towel. The messages also refer to engraving bullets and a mention of a scope and the rifle being unique. Messages from the contact Tyler also mentioned that he had changed outfits.
So he actually put down in writing exactly what he did. One of the sayings that were written on the casings was, "Hey, fascists. Hey, fascists." That was to Kirk. And evidently they have trans language, whatever that is. Kash Patel is just talking about right now how he likes cops to be cops and let them go out and let them loose exactly about how to solve these crimes. And that's what happened. I mean, by the way, in this age of surveillance, Josh, of everyone's got a Ring camera and every school has got a camera because of fear of things like this, thankfully it makes it easier to capture these guys.
Yeah, that's for sure. I am sort of, I shouldn't be shocked perhaps, but the fact that it sounds like this guy posted his intentions before the crime, he actually literally was communicating to folks, like-minded folks perhaps, on social media, on Discord, on what he was going to do, but the plan to commit this crime. I mean, it's a powerful bit of evidence, but it's disturbing. I mean, it indicates that there are other radical, like-minded people out there. I mean, the notion that that's even, you know, that in and of itself is just a disturbing notion. But clearly, there's evidence that they have from social media that this guy premeditated. This is a premeditated crime, and it was a political motive.
So, yeah, it was on Discord, which is more of a gaming communications device, and he was willing to map out exactly what he was going to do. He was going to wrap up the gun, and he was going to put it in a wooded area, and it did. But the problem is, for him, is that we caught him on camera going into a wooded area, so they know exactly where to look. Here's a little more about what was on the gun and the casings.
Investigators noted inscriptions that had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, "Notices, bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this, question mark?" Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey, fascist, exclamation point, catch, exclamation point." Up arrow symbol, right arrow and symbol, and three down arrow symbols. A second unfired casing read, "Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow." And a third unfired casing read, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO.
You are gay. I'm just writing this down. Pretty amazing, right? This guy, remember, the epitaph's written by the shooter in Minneapolis of that church, also had a bunch of messages on not only the magazines, but on the bullets themselves. Crazy stuff, Josh Crash Hour.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just processing it as I'm hearing it. I mean, the casing that said fashion, I mean, that between the fact that he had made comments in the last, I guess, the recent, very recent past, indicating his animosity towards Charlie Kirk and his political disagreements, and having a casing with, you know, fascist on it. I mean, that does seem to add evidence to the fact that this was obviously a politically motivated murder. I don't know the other inscriptions. I really don't know what to make.
I don't know what they mean, but yeah. You know, I guess something with a gay reference and a bulge and whatever, that could be some of the trans language. And what they'll find out, they'll know in 2 seconds. But what was happening? A lot of conversation about the trans shooter in Minneapolis, and the fact that killer was saying what a bad idea it was to do this. And that became a lot of the dictation. What kind of drugs were people getting at a young age when they wanted, what kind of hormones as they try to perhaps get through their psychological challenges by changing genders? And that was a conversation that everybody was having. And Charlie Kirk was one of the people outspoken about that and on college campuses. And that kid was college age. Right now, Kash Patel is now speaking. Big story in the New York Times, how there wasn't enough coordination. It took 10 hours for Kash Patel to get a picture from the bureau over in Utah. And I think he was getting upset. And people talked about that's why him and Dan Bongino flew out to see for themselves. But maybe that was overstated because they got their guy.
Yeah, look, I think Monday morning quarterbacking, I'm not sure if it was the wisest policy approach for the FBI director to post on social media about people they had been in, that had been in for questioning and name. This is the scourge of social media. Like, sometimes you just do the investigation behind the scenes, and then when you get your guy, you announce the result, which is what's happening right now. So thankfully, it does seem like law enforcement did their job. They got the outcome that they were looking for. That's good news. We do know, by the way, speaking of the motive, Brian, we do know the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that based on their conversations with law enforcement officials, what we're hearing now, that these casings had, you know, fascist on them and also, you know, trans type rhetoric. Now, it sounds like that has proven to be the case, at least on the fascist and the inscription front, and then on one of the casings having the word fascist on it. I don't know what these other words mean, but maybe they had already done some legwork, and that's how they came to the conclusion. So that Wall Street Journal report that got a lot of attention yesterday about the motive of the shooter looks like it was on the right track. It looks like that's been proven based on the press conference today.
I'm very curious to see if he ever went on a microphone and sparred with Charlie Kirk in the past. And I just don't know. Like, they, you know, the people were profiling him yesterday. He says this guy looks like he's a first-time killer. It looks like something that he thought about, but he's never done before. And anyone who said it was well planned didn't really see him grab the banister as he left. Didn't see him throw the gun, walk around with the gun sticking in his short in his pants. And of course, he left footprints. He left footprints, and he left elbow prints. Whatever they can do with that. So they had a lot of information on him. So it wasn't the most planned. And people say it wasn't that difficult a shot. I'm not a gun guy, but it seemed pretty difficult to me, especially under those circumstances, to be able to pull that off, especially with this older gun that he evidently had.
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear more about how he obtained the gun, about how much training he had, about how he got onto that roof. There are a lot. I mean, I'm sure a lot of these things are currently being discussed at the press conference, but and lack of security. I mean, usually at some of these events, maybe not so much college events, but at political events, you do have some degree of security, which, you know, clearly no one saw this guy on the roof. No one flagged his presence as being anything suspicious. But that is going to be a big question going forward, especially as we discuss and debate the need for more security on campus. And sadly, when you have political speakers come, they're going to be worried about safety and security, especially on these college campuses.
Josh, real quick, rapid fire. Is it going to be a government shutdown?
That's the way it's trending, Brian. You have Chuck Schumer, who got roasted from his base for not pushing for a government shutdown the last time things came to a head. And you also have Ezra Klein, who's usually, maybe more of a pragmatist, counseling in his column in the New York Times, which has a very significant readership among Democrats and leadership, to go ahead and force the leader's hand. So it does seem like the momentum is heading towards a September shutdown.
Trump is going to go to town when he's left alone. So Congress might not like the power they're going to leave him. We'll see. But do you need 60 votes to not shut down the government?
Yeah, I know that came up on your interview with the president. But yeah, that's why Democrats are now. I mean, if Republicans have the Senate majority by a comfortable margin, but they need to get 7 Democratic votes.
So I was right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We'll let the record show. Allison, I know more than the president of the United States. Okay. All right. So Spencer Cox, the governor, is still talking. Josh, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Handling the breaking news, offering instant analysis. Josh Crash Hour. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls. 1-866-408-7669. I'll have about 4 or 5 minutes, so get on board. Matthew Continenti at the bottom of the hour, columnist at the Free Press.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Investigators interviewed a family member of Robinson who stated that Robinson had become more political in recent years. The family member referenced a recent incident in which Robinson came to dinner prior to September 10th, and in the conversation with another family member, Robinson mentioned Charlie Kirk was coming to UVU. They talked about why they didn't like him and the viewpoints that he had. The family member also stated Kirk was full of hate and spreading hate. The family member also confirmed Robinson had a gray Dodge Challenger.
So that is the governor announcing Tyler Robinson is the killer. He's 22 years old. He was born in April of 2003. We know he's got a sibling, lives in a 6-bedroom house. His mother evidently is from a prominent family. His dad, this makes sense now because we had President Trump on the couch and he said a pastor and family member turned him in. This is both. He's a local pastor or minister. And he's reportedly learned of the crime from Tyler's confession, contacted authorities, and held his son until U.S. Marshals arrived. President praised his dad as a hero for doing that, obviously, but he also raised him. Curtis, you're in Brooklyn, New York. Curtis.
Hey, Brian. So I was just going to say, I actually know what the arrow combination on the bullet casing means.
Okay, go ahead.
It's from a video game, came out last year. There's a whole community behind it. It's called Helldivers 2, and it's a Starship Troopers type of bug extermination game, whatever, to call in airstrikes and to call in some of your ordnance from your spaceship above. There is a button combination menu, and it consists of up, down, left, right, up, down, left, right, you know, down, right, right, whatever the example is. And so it's big in the gaming community. There's nothing nefarious about it necessarily, but, I've noticed you see stickers on car windows and shirts that get made. People have favorite airstrikes and they do that. So I think that that's what that refers to.
Belichow?
Being part of the gaming community.
What about Belichow?
The game's called, I don't know that. That sounds Italian to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from. Hate fascist and catch. Hence, catch a bullet. And then it's fascinating. I don't know anything about the gaming world. So you were great. And Eric does. And Eric, one of our producers, Board Ops, says the same thing. You're 100% right. Appreciate it. Callers are often smarter than the hosts. And there's another example. Curtis, good job. When we come back, more on this killing. Also, we're going to talk to Matt Continente, a columnist on the Free Press and director of domestic policy and studies at the American Enterprise Institute.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
With a high degree of certainty, we have him.
Right
in
now.
Custody. Right? In custody. Everyone did a great job. We worked with the local police, the governor. Everybody did a great job. You know, getting somebody that you start off with absolutely nothing. And we started off with a clip that made him look like an ant that was almost useless. We just saw there was somebody up there. And so much work has been done over the last 2.5 days.
And the guy's name is Tyler Robinson. He comes from a somewhat prominent family. It looks like his dad was a member of the clergy. He was also a sheriff. And he seems his dad heard his confession and turned him in. And other people did notice who he is. And they were looking at his postings. And I'm talking about the assassin of Charlie Kirk, the alleged assassin. But if you look at the tapes, you look at the video, you look at the pictures, you look at the gun, you got the fingerprints, you know you got the guy. Hopefully he was acting alone. But let's see. What does it mean in the big picture? Matthew Continente writes about it with the Reef Press, and he also is a member playing a vital position with AEI. Matthew, your reaction to the capture of the assassin 2 days after he killed?
Well, my first reaction, Brian, is that I'm pleased that justice seems to be done. My second reaction is, I can't say that I'm surprised by some of the messages we're hearing about this assassin's politics. As Governor Cox described in the news conference, he apparently had been growing more political over time. He describes Charlie Kirk as someone who spread hate. And it turns out that the cartridges were engraved with messages. One of them, a very well-known Antifa-like message. So what we have here is a political assassination by what it seems to me to be a member of the radical left, not unlike the killing of the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, by Luigi Mangione last year. And that's why my final reaction is real disturbance, because it seems as though there are copycats, a growing number of young men who are becoming radicalized by a socialistic anti-American ideology, and they're ready to commit acts of terrible, heinous violence in order to further their political ideology.
I mean, it's easy to marginalize Ryan Root. The guy's an absolute basket case. He's got mental issues. He's his own attorney in court. He's the second assassin. We don't know much about the first assassin. Then you look at some other people in history, and you see they have a screw loose. But this guy's part of a movement. That's what I find disturbing. It seems part of an ideology. It seems, and didn't want to hear anything else. I mean, the irrationality of if it is a member of Antifa or a sympathizer, they're absolutely irrational, don't seem particularly involved in society, kind of want to destroy it, and look at guys like me or you as the enemy.
Well, they look at America as the enemy, Brian. This is someone who, if these messages turn out to be true and plausible, he was someone who believed that America was a fundamentally unjust system, and that someone like Charlie Kirk, whose whole life, his young life, was premised on the idea that America is good, and he wanted to convince young people, Charlie did, that to love their country and to celebrate traditional institutions, including the family, including religion, including the market, that's the enemy to this movement that is, it seems, becoming radicalized and increasingly violent. in order to tear down the United States of America, tear down everything that we think of as civilization. And the fact that they are now targeting not just politicians, but private individuals. Charlie Kirk was not an elected official. He was a social media presence. He was a star. He was a political activist. And he paid for the courage that he showed every time he walked onto a college campus in order to debate with his life.
He had six members of his own security team that came out of his wallet, I'm sure. I know he did it to raise awareness, and we've been talking for over the last 6-8 years what he's done on college campuses. I'm sure, Matt, we were told it's never going to happen. College campuses in my lifetime has always been a bastion of liberalism. That's nothing going to change. Republicans made a huge mistake, George Will wrote, and just basically giving up on college campuses. And then Charlie Kirk comes along at 18. He decides to engage, gets these huge crowds and these isolated people who love politics or actually want to do it for a living, finally had a place to go. And next thing you know, three election cycles in, it hit its zenith, and suddenly Republicans getting the youth vote. He's responsible. So how do you stop him? You kill him, right? How do you stop him? You don't get another group and make it bigger. You don't try to spar with them because it gives you the opportunity and win the argument and go viral online, which is an opportunity for you. I have to kill them. Where does that mindset come from?
Well, it comes from a mindset that believes that the system is beyond repair. It comes from a mindset that completely dehumanizes your political opponents. It comes from a mindset, I have to say, where everyone views Donald Trump as somehow a dictator in the making. And people view and demonize Republicans and Trump supporters as fascists or Nazis. And if the stakes are that high to an addled mind, then you do commit acts of violence. And that's why it's important that we just take a look here and say that we're here to continue the American experiment. Donald Trump is not a dictator. He's someone who has electrified millions of Americans with the message of common sense and a desire to improve our country. And there are people on the left. They're not communists necessarily, but they have a different view of how to make America better. But then you need to argue with them. You need to use words.
Yeah.
You can't use bullets because otherwise the whole thing collapses.
I know, Matt, you're a deep thinker and a political scientist. So I think the thing that switched over the last 4 years is it went from conservative liberal to common sense and what are you thinking? I mean, literally, these are not sometimes as hard issues. But this is, do you want to seal the border? No, the border's sealed. The border's sealed? Of course it's not sealed. Oh, that's migration. That's world migration, or that's climate change, or we don't need a wall, or don't be xenophobic as we watch our cities overflowing with illegal immigrants that we can't afford, bankrupting cities, being that they're on social programs. And common sense is trans men and women sports. That's pretty obvious, but it doesn't seem to be. You know, charter schools is basically another thing. Common sense. People who have an opportunity to go to a charter school should be able to. Teachers unions don't allow that. People say, why, if you cared about minorities, wouldn't you do that? So these issues, it used to be stuff that's debated in halls. But other times, I feel like you want to knock them on the head and go, wake up.
Well, this is why the fact that Kirk was assassinated on a college campus was grimly symbolic, Brian. Because the college campus is supposed to be a place of free inquiry, open debate, discussion, civil discourse, viewpoint diversity. But over the past decade, it seems to me college campuses, and I'm not singling this particular college campus out, but college campuses have become petri dishes of every sorts of radicalism, whether it is anti-Americanism, whether it's anti-capitalism, whether it's anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, whether it's the type of racial essentialism, the type of 1619 project mentality that says America has been corrupted from the very beginning. This is the culture in which many young people now marinate for years. And then they emerge from these colleges. they have a degree that's not worth the paper it's printed on, and they have mountains of debt, and they have resentment,
yep.
And then they have this sense of entitlement. And that's what makes this so disturbing, is the fact that there's not one, there's not two of these guys. There may be many more of them out there.
You know, I never thought about that. I also, it's a possibility, but it's actually more likely. So AOC was asked about this. She canceled her event this weekend. Cut 12.
Republicans are saying that Democrats too often have referred to them as Nazis, dictators. Is that the kind of rhetoric that you think there should be less of, or do you think that criticism is misplaced?
I believe that if we want to stop the scourge of violence in this country, we must do our jobs and pass common sense gun safety reforms in the United States, period.
Really? Gun reform?
What a dodge. She didn't answer the question. And, you know, I would just recommend to AOC, she needs to take a look at the video that her mentor Bernie Sanders put out, because I don't agree with Bernie Sanders on a single thing, except for what he told his followers in this video, where he said, violence is never an answer. And in fact, violence in politics is the coward's way, because it's an admission that you are unable to convince people through peaceful means, through civil discourse, that your ideas are true. So AOC had a moment there where she could have stepped up to the plate. And she whiffed. She missed the ball.
Right. No one's worse than Ilhan Omar. I got to let you hear this. Cut 9.
There are a lot of people who are out there talking about him just wanting to have a civil debate. These people are full of shit, and it's important for us to call them out while we feel anger and sadness. There is nothing more shit up, you know, like... Than to completely pretend that, you know, his words and actions have not been recorded and in existence for the last decade or so.
So she totally punts on saying that Charlie Kirk basically deserved it, right? We don't want him to get killed, but he did. You know, that's what happens when you speak like that.
No, it's despicable comments from Ilhan Omar, and you know, not surprising for those of us who have followed her career. And this is, I think, the major problem here, which is that we have this rising political violence. We have this real left-wing radical tendency now that is taking up arms and flouting the law. And we also have kind of people on the socialist squad and some other parts of the left and the Democratic Party who are willing to say, well, maybe it's justified to the degree that the victims had it coming. Or in the case of, say, the riots in Los Angeles over the ICE raids there, that is celebrated as resistance, when in fact it's violating the law. So I think we need to take a step back and we need to say, look, we need the rule of law. We need the Constitution. We need to agree on the principles of freedom of speech, freedom of conscience. Those are the bedrocks of America. If we give up on those, that we're not really, we're going to fall into the abyss. And so, I don't think most Americans want to go there.
Nope.
But we need more people in Congress to talk about the importance of the Constitution and American ideals. And we need fewer Ilhan Omars and AOCs.
Yeah, I can't wait to see where we go from here. As the president said to us today, you got to move on. You know, as bad as it is, and he's a personal friend, like a family member, really was. And don't anyone tell you different. Charlie Kirk was always with President Trump, and they were talking 2-3 times a day, played a big role. They had mutual respect for each other, obviously. So this is like a loss of the family. And he said, my message is you got to move on. You know, you can't alter your life. You got to go forward. 9/11 is an example, and a lot of lawmakers, out of security reasons, canceled their event this weekend. AOC canceled her event this weekend. If Matt Continente has a speech, are you going to go?
You have to. You have to go. Obviously, you take precautions.
Yeah.
But we can't. This is exactly like 9/11 in the sense. What 9/11 wanted to wreck the American economy. It wanted to put Americans in a crouch, protective crouch. And this is the same intent. It's meant to deter people like Charlie Kirk from going to college campuses and spreading a message of conservatism. You know, and so you can't give in. And that's why it was important that Robinson was apprehended as quickly as they did. And it's also why I think President Trump's message to you this morning was important, Brian, because he also said, yeah, he said, we need to move on. But he also said, you know, out of terrible tragedies, sometimes there's some good. And I think what this has done, it's not just a wake-up call that we never would have wanted to have, but I think it's also sending a lot of young people back to Charlie Kirk. And they're looking at his messages, and they're looking at his podcasts, and they're looking at the example he set, not just politically, with his own life. He got married. He had these two beautiful young kids. He was deeply religious. He was committed to his community. That is how you lead a life of human flourishing. That's the example that we need more of in America. And I can only hope that more young people learn from Charlie Kirk's example in the aftermath of this awful, awful week.
Matthew Continetti, thanks so much. Read his stuff in the Free Press. Got a great column out today. And now I'll write another one now that we know who killed Charlie Kirk. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks, Matt.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We can return violence with violence. We can return hate with hate. And that's the problem with political violence, is it metastasizes. Because we can always point the finger at the other side. And at some point, we have to find an off-ramp, or it's going to get much, much worse. But see, these are choices that we can make. History will dictate if this is a turning point for our country. But every single one of us gets to choose right now if this is a turning point for us. We get to make decisions. We have our agency. And I desperately call on every American, Republican, Democrat, liberal, progressive, conservative, MAGA, all of us to please, please, please follow what Charlie taught me.
So there's Spencer Cox, friend of Charlie Kirk, who was gunned down this week, and then we finally got his assassin, Tyler Robinson. We know that it looks like he's got one sibling. It looks like his dad turned him in. He made a pretty obvious on one of his social media accounts what he did before he did it, and now he actually executed the exact plan. And the plan got him turned in because he was able to execute the shot, sadly, and execute somebody as, and by the way, I think everyone should see this tape because you should see the horror of someone's life being taken away and how brutal these shootings are. And to see someone executed like this in the prime of his life in front of a huge crowd, outstandingly successful at the age of 31, and this loser out of college thinks that he doesn't like what somebody says, so I'll get on a roof, I'll kill him. What do you think? And I write some things on a bullet casing because I'm really, really cool. And by the way, in case you hadn't noticed, we're not canceling anything either. September 27th, I'll be in Richmond, Virginia. And then November 1st, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. History, liberty, and laughs. We will have fun. And we'll talk about serious stuff, too. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget One Nation Sundays, 10 p.m.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show, and a really impactful week. We're always going to remember. Eric Trump is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour, and He's got a book, Under Siege, and it tells the story from the family perspective on what it was like being the son of Donald Trump, president of the United States, most impactful of this generation, clearly. And also, he runs the business. So when the president goes into politics, he runs the business, and the business was targeted, and the toll it took, and how they stuck together. It's all in his book, but more importantly, he lost what many people think is a Trump friend, and that is in Charlie Kirk, one of the most impactful political operatives that I've ever seen. And I feel like I watched it happen, because I remember I was on a book tour over in Florida, and they just said, Brian, you have to do this thing, Turning Point. It's more of an event. I thought, okay, is it a book signing? They go, no, it's an event. You got to speak. Do I have to speak first? Yeah, all right. I'll probably say a few things about George Washington's Secret Six and see if these kids, it's a young group, so keep that. All right, they care about history? Oh, they really care about history. I'm like, a young group cares about history. And I walked in, and I feel like it was Miami. I'm not sure. Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And I walk in, and the place is mobbed, probably 7,000 people. And I was the second or third speaker, and it was, you could hear a pin drop when you spoke. All these kids, I go, you guys go to college? I was just astounded. I go, wait, you're in college here for history, political talks, and debates? I couldn't believe it. He goes, well, that's this guy, Charlie Kirk. He didn't go to college, and he's really unbelievable. And you just watch him grow from there. And I was actually asked to do his event in August. I couldn't do it. Was supposed to do it in December, and sadly, he gets gunned down. So what happens to Turning Point? It's small in comparison to what happens to his children and his wife. But we do have some good news. They have the killer. His name is Tyler Robinson. He's from the area. And we just watched a press conference wrap up that talked about the manhunt that yielded results. Shannon Bream will be all over this as anchor of Fox News Sunday. Fox News' chief legal analyst, too. Shannon, we got him. Right? Or they got him.
Yeah. And goodness, I mean, people were so frustrated the last 48 hours or so. But when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, everything that came together, this is actually a pretty speedy conclusion. Now, there's much more to come. Innocent until proven guilty. We don't even have the formal charges or the state or federal charges yet on this individual. But there seems to be some pretty compelling evidence is put forth by the governor on exactly conversations with family members, with a roommate, digital traces of evidence, physical evidence they'll go through now. And so, I said to Sammy, my assistant, I thought I would feel some sense of relief over this, and I really don't. I'm just still heartbroken and angry, and like all of us are who cared about Charlie and care about his family. I hope in some way it will bring them some kind of, I don't think relief is the right word, but some sense of justice maybe at some point.
So, I mean, so it's weird because what we know about the first shooter in Butler is who got killed. But he was all over the place. Who he liked, who he didn't like, just nuts. And we see how crazy Ryan Ruth is in his court proceedings. He's representing himself. But this guy is a political. He is a political activist. He did look. He had the inverse views, it seems, of Charlie Kirk. But instead of trying to win, get behind a candidate, he decides to kill. Here's what the governor said as he had made it official. They got the manhunt was over.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI.
So, family turned him in, but Spencer Cox went on.
Investigators interviewed a family member of Robinson who stated that Robinson had become more political in recent years. The family member referenced a recent incident in which Robinson came to dinner prior to September 10th, and in the conversation with another family member, Robinson mentioned Charlie Kirk was coming to UVU. They talked about why they didn't like him and the viewpoints that he had. The family member also stated Kirk was full of hate and spreading hate. The family member also confirmed Robinson had a gray Dodge Challenger.
And that's the car they were looking for, and they already had the gun. And Shannon, they had the fingerprints, so I'm not worried about his conviction. I'm sure he'll get the death penalty, I hope. But the fact is, he does have lived in a house of $36,000. He had a six-bedroom house, it seems. He's got one sibling. And there is video online of him opening up a letter and getting $32,000 for a college scholarship, even though they don't have him listed in college. What I'm trying to say is this is not somebody whose life has dealt him a bad set of cards.
Yeah. And so you wonder how he got to this point.
Yeah.
And it gets to Charlie's point. When you stop having dialogue and uncomfortable conversations, to me, I worry in the silence is where people get radicalized. And kids are communicating in places that their parents don't go, like Discord, like gaming systems. There are all kinds of conversations they're having. Now, interesting to me that it appears this family member had shared that there were open conversations about this person not liking Charlie Kirk, knowing that he was coming to visit, expressing his political views, which, listen, we all should do that. And I think within a family or within a friendship or, you know, those kinds of community conversations, that's where we should be having these conversations. But at some point, this guy turned, this alleged shooter, he turned a corner into a place that was very dark. And to where he thought, you know, as the governor said, words are not violence, but we're being told that you can meet political rhetoric with physical violence. And that message has gotten to these young people, the Luigi Mangionis and others, and people who will wear T-shirts with these guys' pictures on them and celebrate them. We have to figure out how to stop that conversation because there are young people, polling shows, who think that these kinds of political killings are justified.
So, Shannon, think about this. This guy's lived a cushy life over in Utah, was able to find himself, perhaps not even in college, and he's about to live the rest of his life in high-security prison and eventually have a grisly, lonely death. I mean, why don't they understand, these are socialized people, the consequences of this action? That's my sentiment. I'd like to kill that guy, but no one does, or we didn't. I like to, that Charlie Kirk, he's hurting the country. Yeah, I can't wait to debate him. But why does he think, you know, it's worth it? Luigi Maggioni, rich family. Why is it worth it to kill a CEO that has nothing to do with your life?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think people are desensitized to the reality of just reality. I mean, I think these kids live in a world where they operate virtually in gaming and other places where they've lost the value of life. They've lost the ability to have relationships and conversations with people. So you don't even see somebody as a human being. And, you know, me as a person of faith, I see everybody from Osama bin Laden on down as somebody who was created in God's image. And if you can't look at somebody who just you have a political disagreement with and see them as a human being, you see them as a target, as an enemy, as somebody who is not your equal, not worthy. Your life and theirs are not of the same value. I think those are a lot of the messages, and isolation will do that to people, young and old. And when you just dehumanize someone and you think my part of this political conversation is stopping that rhetoric, stopping that part of the political conversation, you're just not dealing in reality. And he is, as you said, going to get a real cold, hard check on reality. My fear is, listen, if this guy, as it looks like it is, the evidence adds up and this guy ends up getting convicted. My frustration is that death penalty cases go on an average of like 20 years after conviction, and millions of dollars are spent on appeals. And these people live a long time in prison, and he will become a folk hero to some people.
I know. Look at Mangione. I mean, look at how people are proposing to him, thinks he did a great thing.
I mean, Brian, I literally was in an airport months ago going through a security checkpoint, and a young person in front of me had on a T-shirt with Mangione on it, and it was styled with him with a halo like he was a saint. And it was everything I could do not to have a confrontation with this person. Not that it would have gotten ugly, but to even say to them, this man had children. What if somebody killed your father walking down the street, shot him in the back? Like, it just floors me that there is a segment of society that would think, yeah, I'm going to wear this T-shirt glorifying a murderer and not have any compunction about doing that in public.
I know. How are you handling this weekend? How are you handling the show Sunday? Do you know, I'm sure everything's so fluid, but.
Well, we're going to keep some of the guests we have, and we've added some other ones. We've got Speaker Johnson with us to talk about, you know, where you go from here. You've heard some lawmakers say, I'm canceling events. I'm not going to have these conversations. It's too dangerous. How do you protect, you know, lawmakers, but also political activists and voices, important people? How do you do that moving forward? We've got two of my favorite people, Professors Robbie George and Cornel West from Princeton. If you know anything about them, these guys are diametrically opposed on everything ideologically, but they're really good friends. So we're going to talk about where we go from here. How do you have this conversation? We're going to talk to Adam Smith, also Democrat congressman, about those things and also a lot of foreign policy, because underneath these horrific headlines about Charlie, we've got really big issues with Poland and Russia and Gaza and Qatar and Israel. And we're going to try to get through some of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, you have and using Bret Baier's interview with the foreign minister, and then the president did comment on both with us on the couch today.
It was an excellent conversation. I watched it, and you guys always do a fantastic job.
Well, thank you. And on One Nation tonight, because you want to get a pen ready, because I don't want to have to call you later.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have you, Hewitt. I'm thinking of with John Walsh on the manhunt, what went into it, the crime in our cities. And we're going to have, who else are we supposed to have on the show? Allison, do you remember?
How about Allison?
Yeah. Oh, Jack Cittarelli, who wants to be the next governor.
Yes.
As you know. And he thinks he's going to close that 9-point gap. And he's certainly confident. We'll see. We know the president did very well in New Jersey.
That's been a very interesting state in recent elections, too.
Absolutely. So we'll see what's happening by Sunday. And I think that something's going to be happening personally in Gaza this weekend. So I think that's going to blow up.
It looks like all signs point to something big. So we'll have it covered, as you will, and I will watch you and take notes like I always do.
All right, Shannon, stay within yourself.
You too. Bye, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. We have a few minutes in the bottom of the hour. We're going to welcome in Eric Trump, and he's got his new book. And, of course, he lost a great friend. So the President of the United States was with us today, and he was able to announce on Fox and Friends that they got the guy. Now we know his name is Tyler Robinson. We don't know the details. We know that he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison, turned in by his family. I don't think that this guy thought it through, but he was planning it, and he did plan to get out. I just think that fascinating. Shannon's take was interesting because these guys who do such horrific things for the first time go into supermax prisons. I mean, what, you know, if you grow up in the streets and you're hanging out with gangsters and you're in and out of prison, you know what you're getting into. You join the military, you train, go to boot camp and you go out there and train. You know you could get captured and killed at any moment. You know how tough war can be. But you got a guy here that was in college age kid, 22 years old, whose life seemed ultimately middle class in the most peaceful place in the world, Utah. They said, yeah, the only thing I could do is kill this guy. What could happen? Maybe I'll get away with it. But if I don't, what? I mean, fill in the gap. If I don't, I'll be killed, right? Or if I don't, I will spend the next 60, 70 years in prison. So when you think about that, any rational 22-year-old, and most think rational, you know, you're not a 16-year-old that gets picked on. 22-year-olds, okay? Yeah, don't like this guy. But there's no way I'm going to kill this person. You know, this isn't, sometimes you hear about relationships and the love and hate, so close, so true. If you talk to cops, they say domestic violence is the most intimidating thing to walk into because it escalates so quick. And the ones that end up perpetrating the violence or becoming victims, they always say it's the first time. And that's true. It's because the emotions got the best of you. This is not an emotionally filled thing. You got to think about this. You got to be calculated. You got to get dressed. You got to be able to tell people, let people know by your demeanor that you're not going to kill anybody. You got to go up the stairwell. You're going to get your black outfit out. You're going to get your shirt that says you're for freedom so no one suspects that you might be anti-Charlie Kirk because he's for freedom. And then you got to scope out the best building. You got to find a way to get on top of those roofs. And then you got to see where exactly the stage is going to be, and where can you set up? And then if I do shoot, where do I go? So this is not rage. There's not rage. There's not, I'm sorry, I lost my temper. I'm sorry. I punched this guy so hard. He hit the ground, broke his head open, dead. You know, I didn't know what I was capable of that. Well, that DWI. I got too drunk one night. I got behind the wheel. I made a terrible decision. You don't get a DWI being perfectly sober. It's not possible. And to me, you kill for the first time. I think that he probably, and if he's on these gamer sites, that it indicates by what he wrote on one of those casings, He is. And by the way, he was communicating. What was the name, Allison, of the communication platform? What was it? Discord? He was on Discord, so he's a gamer. So maybe he didn't think like death was real and shooting in real blood was real blood. But not only does he kills in a horrific way. He kills him and shoots him in the neck where you couldn't possibly survive. And he dies. So what is the, I mean, what is going on here? This isn't like, well, he never had a dad and he was lived on the streets and his mom was hooked on crack and he never had a role model, never had a brother or a sister or a teacher. This is like, this guy had everything. And then judging by what the tape I see online, he had a scholarship, $32,000 to go to some college, right? And in Utah, might be in-state tuition, might be a full ride. So don't tell me this guy had to get it. He reads his stuff and he says, I have to act. I got to kill people. So Tom Suozzi was on with this yesterday. And this is what he hopes comes out of this. Cut 17.
We have so much work to do to try and heal some of this division. Like he just said in that piece you just had, we don't have to agree with each other and everything, but we have to have civil discourse and talk to your segment. This segment is so important. Because you try to bring Democrats and Republicans to have a conversation in a civil way. And, you know, I'm so happy to be joining Tracy Mann because, you know, we couldn't be more different. I'm from New York. He's from Kansas. He's a Republican. I'm a Democrat. And he's my friend. We're friends with each other.
And he wants to get the Problem Solvers Caucus front and center. I think he should, too. Brian, you're in North Dakota. Hey, Brian.
Hey there. Just a real sad time for everybody. Voiceless use of, to do this to somebody. But what I was reaching out to your earlier guest was talking about the causes of this. One of them is being within the schools. And you're looking at what we're doing in our schools. We're training, as Stalin said, give me my children for 2 years and they'll, for 5 years, then they'll be mine. And so now you have all the gay right activists and cross-dressing and everything else going on in pride stuff in elementary schools. And I work and deal with a lot of college professors, and they're still glorifying this. They're socialists. They've been socialists all their lives. Their parents were teachers and socialists. I came from an area that had a very strong Presbyterian conservative college. It's now just a woke mess. And unless we get a hold of our schools, we're going to continue to train our children to do this.
I know. You know what? That's a good point. That has to be a portion of it, too. But the fact is, how do you kill people? I mean, if you're not from that environment and if you have a relatively soft life, what makes you say, okay, I'm going to be a sniper and I'm going to kill somebody unarmed from a distance and try to get away with it? It's as if they don't understand this is real life or what real life is. Good points. Thank you.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
With a high degree of certainty, we have him.
Right
in custody. Okay? In custody. Everyone did a great job. We worked with the local police, the governor. Everybody did a great job. You know, getting somebody that you start off with absolutely nothing. And we started off with a clip that made him look like an ant that was almost useless. We just saw there was somebody up there. And so much work has been done over the last 2.5 days.
So that was the news the president shared with us at 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, that they got this guy who we later know is Tyler Robinson, 22 years old, lives in the area. They found him 3.5 hours away. That was something that Eric Trump cares deeply about, because Charlie Kirk, by all accounts, was like the was like a brother to Eric, and they know they work side by side. He was like family. Everyone, even the President of the United States, really says he felt that way. Eric has a book out. It's called Under Siege, My Family's Fight to Save the Nation. Eric, you must be relieved that your dad was able to make that announcement.
Brian, I can't even tell you. I mean, honestly, when I was watching Kash Patel, obviously, I was watching my father on Fox and Friends this morning, and, you know, Kash is a dear friend of mine. Charlie was a dear friend of mine. I met Charlie when he was 21 years old. He came into the Trump organization, and I think, the first one that met him in our family. And he told me about all these lofty aspirations that he had to grow, you know, kind of this movement across college campuses and reverse the indoctrination of our kids. And, you know, they had one or two, you know, kind of college setups at that point, but nothing like the organization that it is. Turning Point was just getting going. And yet he depicted exactly what Turning Point is today. I mean, word for word, I want to grow. I want to change the mindset, you know, of kids across this nation. I want to stop the indoctrination. I want to stop the wokeness. I want to be in every single college campus. I want to have a major presence. I want these people on, you know, student body boards. You know, I want them challenging professors. And honestly, as I sit here and look and just kind of remember the life of a dear friend, looking back, he did everything and more. Everything that he sat down and told me he was going to do as a 21-year-old kid, he accomplished and more. And honestly, maybe the greatest image of that was just seconds before he was shot. And you see these crowds of people and, you know, they're you know, they have love of this country and they have love of God and they're so excited to be there and they're having so much fun and they're all wearing 47 hats and they're all holding American flags. The guy accomplished everything that he told me he was going to accomplish when he was 21 years old. When I first met him that time, he was a remarkable human being. He was larger than life. He's such a powerful voice. And he created and helped kind of fulfill a movement that is unstoppable. You know, no bullet is going to stop that movement, Brian. And we're going to miss our friend. We're going to miss our friend.
And the thing is, now it turns out, if everything goes true to form, as we're hearing, this guy is a left-wing zealot. This guy does. There's nothing oppressed in his life. He seemed like a middle-class kid. He lives a six-bedroom house. Living in Utah, basically stress-free. I saw a video online. He's getting a scholarship to college, 22 years old. And don't tell me life was hard for him, that he had to take action. Life was great for him. And he thought, the only thing for me to do now is to kill somebody in the prime of their life in front of a capacity crowd and not for, and just before, because he didn't like what Charlie stood for. That, to me, is insane, even though there's nothing about this guy prior to this that showed insanity.
Well, I mean, it's ironic, Brian, that he uses the words fascist, he uses the words Nazi, he's inscribing that on bullet casings, yet he's the guy standing on a rooftop with a German-made battle rifle, right? Shooting at a crowd of people who are having civil dialogue and having so much fun, all smiles, love this country, love God, you know, fight for God, love our nation. Yet he's the one by himself dressed in all black on a roof with a sniper rifle. I mean, you know, give me a break. It's truly, truly horrible. And as you said, I mean, he got a free scholarship. He had his life ahead of him. You know, how does this anger, you know, how does it evolve in these people? And you know, how are they indoctrinated to such evil kind of lengths that somebody could actually take up arms and do something like this? I will never fully understand it. I can truly, it's just hard for me to compartmentalize how somebody can get to that spot.
So your book Under Siege, you have an announcement about the book and where the proceeds are going.
So Benny Johnson's a dear friend of mine. I was on a show a little while ago, and he was a dear friend of Charlie's, and he was a dear friend of Cash's, and I'm a dear friend of Cash. I mean, you want to talk about all the circles coming together where you have one of your closest buddies arresting a guy who was one of your closest buddies, you know, talking about it with your kind of closest friends. It's also surreal.
Wow.
It's weird and it's surreal, Brian, but I'm going to donate a portion of Under Siege. So it just hit number one on Amazon. It's absolutely flying. And the whole book, the whole premise is they did everything they could to stop our movement. They impeached my father. They took away our freedom of speech. They gagged us. They indicted us over and over. They went after us absolutely relentlessly. They took my father off of ballots. They raided our homes. They tried to break apart our family. They debanked us. They tried to bankrupt our family. They tried to shut down our company. They tried to throw us all in jail. I became the most subpoenaed person in American history. And I wrote the title Under Siege before Butler, Pennsylvania, because that's what they were doing. They were laying siege. And then they tried to kill my father the first time. And then they tried to kill him a second time. And then they tried to kill Kavanaugh. And 2 days ago, they killed one of our closest friends, one of the biggest people in the Make America Great Again movement, right? I mean, if I published this book 2 days later, Charlie would have been in another chapter in exactly what they've done to all of us, which is siege. They wanted to take out our family. They wanted to take out my father. They wanted to take out powerful voices. You know, they're attacking religion. They're attacking our Constitution. They're attacking all of us. They're attacking to everyone listening to this show right now. And that is their siege. And when they couldn't do it with legal lawfare, when they couldn't do it by lies and slander, they did it by violence. And there was never a more appropriate time to publish this book. And in Charlie's honor, I'm going to give, you know, a nice set of the proceeds of this book of all sales to Turning Point, because we cannot allow his voice to be extinguished. We cannot allow our voice to be extinguished. And we will continue to stand on that stage in honor of Charlie and everything that he fought so hard for.
Eric, I think it's going to take a Trump to really step in, because they do not have an heir apparent. They have talent, but they don't have somebody with his charisma drive. I mean, they were soldiers. He was the general. So I think that's the problem. Turning Point's got the people. They're going to have the money. They know how to do it. They can put together an event. Now they need the headliner. And it would be great to see some of the bigger names with the Trump movement sustain it, because you have the same message. And I think that would be great. Hopefully you guys can work that out. But Eric, I want you to hear some of this. So for people who think that you're exaggerating, and I know not many people do, but let's just say some people think you're exaggerating. This is the Attorney General of New York using all her resources to stop you, who doesn't even know you. Listen.
I'm running for Attorney General because I will never be afraid to challenge this illegitimate president.
Tonight we send the message that no one is above the law.
I look forward to going into the office of Attorney General every day, suing him, defending your rights, and then going home.
And they won the civil case and you appealed it, but that was $750 million and you had to scramble to get a bond. And she was trying to stop you from getting a bond. She wanted to carve up all the Trump assets, didn't she?
She wanted to take our name off of every building around the country, and thank God that we won, and thank God the appellate division overruled her, right? Brian, she wanted to extinguish our name, my father's legacy. She wanted to bankrupt us. She didn't give a damn about the thousands of employees that I have working for me all over New York and the tens of thousands of employees I have around the world. She didn't give a damn about those people. So long as she got Donald Trump, she went into office with one mission, as you heard right there, to get Donald Trump. And this is what I talk about in Under Siege, right? I mean, you know, they use legal lawfare. They use political lawfare. They weaponized the DOJ. They raided our houses. They debanked us. Anything that they could to hurt us financially, you know, waste our time, slander us. Look at the dirty dossiers where they, you know, they said the most unthinkable things about my father. They were trying to do that to break up his marriage and so many other things. Look at the whole Russia hoax, right? And when America's not buying it, because they lost time after time after time, the narrative, guess what? You know what they do? They resort to violence. Then they tried to kill him, but not just once, but multiple times. And that's the whole concept of Under Siege. We were getting hit from every side. They were doing everything they could to stop the movement, stop my father's voice, you know, as evidenced by the fact that Twitter ripped him off of Twitter, yet they left Boko Haram, they left the Taliban, they left Al-Qaeda, you know, they left the Ayatollah on Twitter, but yet the 45th president of the United States was no longer allowed to tweet. They wanted to get rid of his voice. They wanted to gag order him. Mm. They wanted his mugshot all over the place. They wanted the 91 indictments. They wanted me to spend $300-400 million on legal fees defending yourself from absolute nonsense when our family's never gotten so much as a speeding ticket before my father decided to run for office the second time. And this was their game, Brian, and that's what the book's about.
And then they took your 80-year-old CFO and put him in jail twice because he wouldn't break and tell you the real story about the Trumps. I mean, think about that.
Well, I mean, they told him. They said, Alan, I mean, and this is a man who has been in our company for 50 years. You tell us anything about Donald Trump and you go free. And he goes, I'm not going to lie. We run a perfect company. We run a perfectly honest company. You know, I mean, they ended up getting him because he didn't declare his corporate car on his personal tax returns. Like, I mean, it's like unbelievable. I mean, they sent this 80-year-old guy to jail for having a corporate vehicle. You literally, Brian, can't make it up. But they had crooked judges. You saw that with Judge Marchand. You saw that with Judge Ngoren in New York. You know, and honestly, Brian, the scary thing about this for me, thank God we had a lot of zeros behind our name. And thank God our entire family had a big voice. And a lot of what I talk about in this book is my father's voice was taken away by the judge in the New York case. So guess what I did? I wasn't gagged. So I went down on the courthouse of those steps every single day. Oftentimes I was talking to you. And I went down there and I laid out every single fact in the case and why it was a sham and why the guy's daughter was working for the other side. I laid out every one of those facts. And that's what I bring into this book. And, you know, they gagged him. But guess what? They didn't gag me. They didn't gag our family. And we would not stop. We would not back down. We would not cower. And that's ultimately why we beat Hillary Clinton when we were at a 5-to-1 disadvantage fund-wise. And that's why we came back despite being against the entire mainstream media. And we're able to win again in 2024 against the most unthinkable odds.
How hard was it to keep the extended family together? Because, you know, when everybody listening to us right now knows whether they were growing up or they have it now, stress when you can't make the bills or when somebody's having a drug problem or having a marriage problem. Everyone's like, you feel the stress everywhere. You know, people, but you have a stress that's pushing on your really on a family business that if it goes under, everything that you have, you lose, which is basically where your family lives. When you're down, like when there's no cameras and no media and you're at a big table on a Sunday afternoon, how stressful was it for the family?
Well, Brian, I think I shouldered all of that weight. I mean, outside of Washington, D.C., I shouldered it all. I think you know I'm the guy that runs the company. I'm the guy that was getting the subpoenas. My father obviously had executive branch protections under, you know, speech and debate clause of the Constitution and a bunch of other things, so it was much harder for them to go after him. And so guess where they sent all the subpoenas? They sent them to me. I became the most subpoenaed man in American history, and yet I go to bed every night at exactly 9 o'clock at night. We say four prayers with my kids. They say the Pledge of Allegiance. I put them down. No drinking, no drugs, no nonsense. No laptops from hell, Brian. You know me very well. You've known me for 20 years. I don't have a dishonest bone in my body. I've never crossed any line. You know, no pictures of illicit drugs, no pictures of prostitution. And yet somehow, you know, I was the guy on this side of the aisle, right? I'm a guy who wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning, goes to work,
right,
to fight for a beautiful family, right, and company. And yet somehow I'm the guy that gets 112 subpoenas. And yet, you know, Hunter Biden, you know, gets away with absolute murder. Like, we've got legitimate businesses. He's selling finger painting all over the world for millions of dollars or was. And yet I'm the guy who's apparently profiting off of government when I have to spend $400 million to, you know, defend ourselves from sham trials. I mean, it's the irony is massive, but I talk all about that in Under Siege. And but our family never broke. They never cowered. Barron's an amazing kid. Tiffany is an amazing girl. Don and Ivanka are two of the greatest people on earth. And you know, it's almost unlikely because you never see that. You never see children of politicians on that stage. In fact, the number one rule in politics, as you know better than anybody, Brian, is keep the kids and family the hell out of politics. And you know, right, the only people we had were ourselves. The only people my father had were Don and I and Laura. And we went out there and we fought. And when you see the assassination of Charlie, it's exactly what they wanted. They wanted to keep us off of that stage, Brian. They didn't want our voices out there. They didn't want me in every single swing state. They didn't want me at these events. They're trying to scare us. And that's why we can never cower.
Let me ask you something. And did you ever sit around and go, Dad, our life was so good? I mean, everybody wanted to play on a Trump golf course and go on your skating rinks and live in your buildings. And your dad and your family was going to every major event in the world. And then 50% of the country decided you're the worst and 50% would say you're the best. And all the courts come in and all the power brokers try to destroy you. Did you ever go up to him and say, Dad, why did you do this?
So I'm going to tell you a story right now that I put in the book that I don't think I've ever shared, but I was in the office with my father when NBC was trying to sign him for another multiple seasons of The Apprentice. Brian, the number of zeros behind that contract, I mean, The Apprentice was all that NBC ever had, right? Like at that period, right? They were getting beaten up by, you know, Survivor was on CBS. NBC was failing in the networks, and they came in and they were begging my father, and they would put as many zeros on the end of the contract. I'm talking about contracts that would go into the billions. And my father goes, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. He never told them why he wasn't going to do it. But about a week later, he announced that he was going to run for president of the United States. And so he had to run through 16 candidates on the Republican side. And these are people who actually knew something about politics. I always joke. I've joked with you a million times, Brian. I didn't know what a damn caucus was, right? Like, I build skyscrapers. I build golf courses. I build, you know, and operate commercial buildings. Like, you know, we didn't know what the hell the delegate process was in this country. And yet, you know, we have to run against Jeb Bush, who had $350 million before South Carolina stuffed in his super PACs. right, against an entire mainstream media who were laughing at us. And, you know, it's really remarkable. And then, and by the way, if you beat those 16, you had to run against Hillary Clinton.
Eric.
And yet he turned down billions of dollars in order to do all of that. I mean, the guy is amazing.
Unfortunately, Eric, we're up against a hard break, but the name of the book is Underseas. A portion of the proceeds are going to Turning Point on a very difficult time. Eric, thanks so much for sharing your time. And I'll talk to you on television next week. We got to do a sequel here on the radio.
I can't wait, my friend.
Back
thanks
in a moment.
Me, Brian.
You got it.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Hey, guys, just a quick message. Thanks, everyone, for listening all week long. And we've been having breaking news throughout the show. And I know some of you get the show on delay and some of you take different hours. But it's just really important that you get the latest information and the most accurate. So thanks for doing that. Also, hope to see you on Sunday night at 10 o'clock on One Nation. Amongst our guests, we're going to have Hugh Hewitt on. We're going to have John Walsh on this whole manhunt. We're going to have the man who wants to be the next governor of New Jersey. Jack Cittarelli is going to be with us, too, and we'll have other important guests that we're still working on, depending on what's in the news, and that'll be really important. So One Nation, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and also go to History for History, Liberty, and Laughs. Sorry, we're going to the 27th in Richmond, Virginia. So if you're in the area, drive by. We'd love to see you, especially if you're one of our many Virginia stations. And then there's VIP opportunities there. And then November 1st, probably our last thing that we do this year in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. It's all sponsored by Fox Nation. It'll be streamed there, too. But it's so good to see me in person. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's The Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.